unelected officials, right? I mean, these are the developers and the owners, the real estate. If we had those kinds of records about their discussions, you know, when they sat with their cigars and their cognac, you know, making these, I would love to know what their reasoning was, right? Yeah. To complete this discussion.
Yeah, we do have a small oral history interviews collection around the Phoenix 40, actually, yeah. In the Arizona collection.
That would be interesting. Yeah.
Other thoughts?
Oh, by the way, city keeps good records, so city council minutes and subcommittee minutes, and that's a good source to at least get a sense of what's openly being discussed.
Yes, openly. That's what I was thinking about.
But you also have there guys like you see in these letters going up there and saying, you guys are a bunch of crooks, and yeah, you see all that stuff.
Yeah, but I was thinking about the Phoenix 40. Where did they used to meet? What was that restaurant? Was it up on the Westward Ho where they used to meet every Thursday?
Durant's.
Was it Durant's where they would meet? Yeah. Yeah, these are the closed door meetings, you know, you can imagine them with their other big stogie cigars, you know.
Durant.
Yeah.
So the letters, there are three different letters from individuals who are affected by these events. Are those voices complete? Are there other voices we should be hearing from? What did you think about the perspectives generated from those letters?
Well, just from his presentation, it's not an accurate representation of the community. These are probably able families that wrote these letters or more educated families. So it was probably 90% South Phoenix was minority back then, as opposed to the whole city being 50-50. So that 90% wasn't really heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, when I was putting this together last summer, I was really disappointed in how little we had in the way of annexation. I don't know that there's a lot in the Chicano Research Collection.
It's very hard for people to attend meetings. Well, it's not that. Let me say this. If you look at the archival records of the State Archives and you're looking for issued content letters related to school segregation, racism, or whatever, you'll find very few letters actually written mm-hmm. by people of color. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, you don't know. But that means archivists have to do a better job of going out into the community and bringing in those records, whether they're records from city council meetings or whether they're records from a group or an organization. Mm-hmm. That means that we have to do a better job as archivists or historians to go out. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness the judge was good enough to donate his material. Mm-hmm. Why he did that, for whatever reason. He maybe was aware of the importance of a scholarship ahead for these kinds of materials to be in an archival repository. But at the same time, there are people who have memories and who can speak, who can talk about these things, and so that's why oral history comes into play again. And then you go back to historians, maybe who say, oh, to graduate students, we need original sources, not newspaper clippings. Not magazine articles.
Guilty. Nancy DeLette has conducted oral histories with city managers across the valley from the Arizona City County Management Association. Right. And you were saying that the annexation came up in those interviews.
Oh, yeah. But it was much like Eduardo saying, you know, phone calls in the middle of the night, well, you know. Yeah, we're going to put Maryvale and South Phoenix together in one package and get there before Glendale gets Maryvale and, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. But mm-hmm. but these letters are really precious in a way that...
They're communists, those movers and shakers, aren't they?
They're what?
They're communists. One letter writer is accusing the city council members of being communists.
Yeah.
Well, they're precious, I think, because you could drive through, you know, South Phoenix now, and the complaints are still the same. You know, it's still mm-hmm. the same thing. Mm-hmm. You can see the consequence of mm-hmm. of this action mm-hmm. many years later.
In terms of the lack of city facilities and services.
Yeah, they're saying, there's streets that need help, and we've been here for 25 years, and they're an eyesore and unfit for travel, and you know.
I wonder if they got their $1 million library.
Yeah, right.
One of the things that we commented here at the table is that these letters are clearly written from a position of privilege. I mean, the people that wrote the letter was defending something that they believe was the right to have. And we wonder if, is there any other source out there that is not, I mean, letters or documents that come from non-privileged residents of Phoenix, because simply when you speak out, when you express your opinion the way they did it, is because you feel that you have to the right to do so.
Yeah.
And I guess that a lot of the Mexicans and other minorities that live in the area didn't feel that.
Yeah, their comments were not welcome.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it leads you to wonder whether there was any sort of grassroots organization that was opposed. We don't see that in this material. It's individuals writing the judge and saying, man, this is really a bad decision.
Well, it could be because that area of the city was basically somewhat divided. You had the heavily Mexicano area, you had the heavily black area on, you know, Broadway Road.
Mm-hmm.
You have the white areas to the, especially the better off towards the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you had an area-wide sense of community other than we're South Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, do you?
I need to age myself a little bit. But I was 21 when I went to go to work for Kelsey and Calvin Good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
sure.
And that was in 1921. And of course, yeah, I'm from South Phoenix, he was from South Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually gave me a little book. It was the Black History of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And
written by Richard Harris.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And, but my understanding was obviously that African Americans and Latino Mexicanos were the residents of South Phoenix. But again, you're talking about a time where people of color could not become landowners. And so it was really easy for white people to come in and take over
mm-hmm.
those properties, that
mm-hmm.
land.
Mm-hmm.
And that really didn't allow perhaps even some of the leadership to emerge like it should have, because the landowners were white.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's accurate. I was late.
And owning land elevated your status. And then again, if you look at some of these items here that we've been reading, those petitions had to be the reason that the opponents lost their suit to challenge this annexation was because they did not have enough signatures from those who had property.
Property, right?
Right? So that's why they lost these attorneys who fought against annexation, because they didn't have enough signatures that were valid according to the judge who was following the law, because these signers, many of them did not have property.
Right.
So were they pro bono?
Yeah.
Were the attorneys who were working
yes, right.
against annexation
right.
doing it pro
for free.
Bono and
yes,
on their own?
No,
too.
No,
yes.
No.
And
no.
Who are they?
Does
and did they live
no,
in
they
South
say
Phoenix?
That.
Do they?
Kevin
yeah.
said that.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So was it resources? Is why they did not pursue a superior court? The lack of resources, they didn't take this to the Supreme Court?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Was there further appeal? We
because they mentioned that there was going to be a possible appeal to the Supreme
mm-hmm.
Court.
They were going to appeal to the Supreme Court, but they didn't.
Or, like he mentioned, there wasn't the grassroots effort that was strong enough to take hold.
So, I live in South Phoenix now. I was thinking about a number of things. One, about the light rail going to Maryvale, South Phoenix. And so there's a lot of similar language being used around the improvements to communities, and one assuming that our communities don't have the ability to and the resources already. But also, particularly the role of the police. In kind of always sort of being in Maryvale, particularly around Grand Canyon University, we see the role of the police in kind of relation to development and in kind of, you know, making things safer for certain people. But also in South Phoenix, 85040 and 85042 are the zip codes where the most folks go in and come out of prison. And so I'm saying these things partly because of the second to last question, but that, you know, here we are having a conversation in this space around the consequences of these decisions now, right? How they play out, who made the decisions, where were they decided at, right? the narratives that are reproduced, the justifications that are politically accumulate will to default to a certain perspective, and the power that perhaps this room has as a consequence of a couple things. There have been meetings all in South Phoenix and in Maryvale around these very processes. What would it mean to introduce this as a historical marker to demonstrate that when we say this has been going on for centuries, mm-hmm. that we have the proof that people need, right? But two, the role of this institution in the relationship to development, policing, these narratives of mm-hmm. improvement narratives, et cetera, that I think we can see have historically justified, right? And I'm not saying we don't want to be different than we are, but the notion that improvement for improvement's sake is someone else's imaginary, right? So I think that those kind of two things, right, around contemporarily what is happening, but two, what could this moment mean for a different engagement of how these historical questions give us so much information as to what to anticipate in the way in which power, the developers, the landowners, the lawmen, the lenders, and the land speculators that have historically developed the West on the backs of violently of other people.
Yeah. Well, what I would add is that there's a different infrastructure of leadership even in South Phoenix, you know, of 100 years ago or even 50 years ago. And you know, the work that we've been doing specifically around Prop 104 that brought mm-hmm. life back mm-hmm. to South Phoenix and just the work that's being done at the grassroots level and just staying on top of it, which perhaps that wasn't possible 50 years mm-hmm. ago during the
Yeah, community has more standing now than it did, and more opportunity to at least voice concerns to city council and to the city. Whether that will result in a different outcome is another matter.
Here's what we're seeing with from our engagement is we are able to get small wins. You know, we were able to change some of the language in the RFPs. We knew it was a $1 billion project, so we're saying there's going to be a windfall here, and it can't be these multi-billion, mm-hmm. multinationals coming into South Phoenix that will benefit and profit the most. It's got to come from the people. You know, the people should be getting that windfall. And so we were able to get in the RFP, both the construction and the design document, or the design RFPs, for them to hire local. And then, of course, there's some state statutes that don't allow you to put specifically mm-hmm. hiring local, but it's a recommendation. Yeah. So both of the winners put one because they did include that local piece, but now it's staying on top of them to make sure that they actually go through the process. So that again, that watchdog or that person's going to be on top of them. But we also deal with the artists. 10 out of 14 artists, they didn't want to put that same language in the artist RFP as they do with the construction and design document, but we fought for it and we got it. And so 10 out of the 14 artists are selected, are going to be building the light rail stop art. So, you know, that's all coming from the community level. Mm-hmm. And so we were at a big meeting yesterday as related to design. We submitted 44 issues that exist in our community related to lighting, sidewalk, walkability, shade, you know, trying to improve the quality of life. I've been born and raised there, and this document that promised the better lighting, mm-hmm. the better park program still doesn't exist. Yeah. It hasn't been happening. So what we're trying to fight is this, you know, get all that embedded into the designing and engineering so that it becomes part of the process. And so, of course, Valley Metro is telling us that it's not in our purview, it's not in our scope of work. And so the city of Phoenix, you know, also is like, well, you know, we're just building a light rail. And so the community is demanding that this has to be a neighborhood improvement project. It's not just about economic development, but it's about human development. It's about the bigger picture and how do you build over time a healthier community, as opposed to the same thing that annexation did. Gentrification is the same thing now with these $1 billion infrastructure projects. Once they come in with this TOD zoning, you know, they're going to have overlays to build 10-story, 20-story buildings all over, you know, 5-story buildings down South Central. You start to displace entire neighborhoods. All these trailer parks were our most vulnerable and have lived for 40 years.
Yeah.
As soon as a developer comes and presents to the landowner, you move out entire communities. So it's the impacts of annexation, and we're having the same thing with these $1 billion infrastructure projects that are coming into our
community. And the ownership started, quite frankly, with with Prop 104, that was the infrastructure that provided the money. 75% of the South Phoenix voters voted for the light rail. So we own it. Mm-hmm. And we've got to be responsible and accountable for it, because it'll come back to us, the voters, right? Well, you all wanted it. So where are you in the process if it screws up along the way? So yes, we take that responsibility very, very, very heavily.
Yeah, it's a big moment for the community.
And an earlier version of the light rail that's mentioned here, the Beltrans, the proposition that kept getting defeated by voters every time the city wanted to expand further north or develop better transportation and maybe move away from problems that related to emissions and pollution for the city. The voters kept saying no to Beltrans every time, because it costs money. Because the city would pay for it, meaning the city would then take away the money.
But as soon as the age of the profile changed?
Yes, yes.
Very interesting, very interesting. All right, we are out of time. I want to thank Chris and Eduardo for their comments today. Shirley?
I just have one thing I want to say. I recorded our discussion, and if you don't want to be part of that recording, please stop here and tell me. But I wanted to capture some of what was said, and I want to urge everyone to exchange contact information, names and contact information, in case we want to be able to follow up with one another, because there's so many ideas brought out today.
Thank you, Shirley. Everyone's on one defended by that.
Yeah, I can delete it, yeah.
And we want to be on that.
Just make it sound smarter than I do.
There are evaluation forms on each of your tables. Please take a minute, very quick. Please complete the evaluation forms. Thank you, Victoria, for hosting us and Cora. And thanks again to the Institute for Humanities Research here at Arizona State University. And I hope you all have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
Thanks, Rob. Can I have your contact info?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm making a little sketch here so I can remember where people are.
Oh, Alan, A-L-A-N, and then Gomez, I like your pen.
This was on the table.
Oh, really? Are there other ones?
There's
one behind you. I'll get it when I leave. AEG at ASU.
AEG. Oh, that's your, okay, AEG.
Yeah, AEG at ASU, sorry.
AG?
Oh, AEG, sorry,
okay,
I mumbled
at
through.
ASU.
At ASU.
And what's your affiliation?
I'm in SST, in the School of Social Transformation.
Okay.
Whatever, SST, whatever that means. Placeholder.
Okay.
So, yeah, maybe I'll go to some point.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay, thank you.
It's the past and the future.
Did you click on this? No?
Yeah, thank you.
Francisco.
What's that? And you're sitting over here, right? Francisco?
Yeah.
Sure.
Uh-huh.
Do you mind if I have the recording?
No problem.
And last name is?
Francisco, L-A-R-A. L-A-R-A.
L-A.
Uh-huh. R-A. Yeah, and I'm in the School of Transborder Studies.
What kind of studies?
Transborder. Uh huh. That's the school.
Okay.
How are you? Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Oh, thank you.
So, are you going to send that? Someone has to
Thank you.
You know, I should have had you go first. Because you gave the.
Such a reason for a long time.
I know. We were folded together.
Are you doing work on this?
That was great, Shirley.
It's just so interesting how much stuff comes up.
I know. It's like there's so much we could talk about. We could have gone on for another hour.
We could have gone on forever.
I mean, maybe we should think about it as occupying larger time.
I think so.
Maybe it's a 2-hour afternoon thing.
We have limited time available.
Right.
And I mean, that might be a deterrent, but there was so much to explore and engage with. So, and that's why I wanted to get, you know, some contact information from people. I know they signed up, but to know, well, that was that person who was out there and talked about such and such.
I know, I've seen you everywhere, or at least reading about you everywhere. So.
Thank you. I'm still doing
my thing. I will, thank you.
Yeah, it was so obvious. It was true.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rob. And thank you.